What's up, Beers and Bible listeners? On today's episode, both of us will respond to four separate questions related to life, theology, ministry, or anything else that we haven't seen or heard about beforehand. So every answer we give will be completely unscripted, for better or for worse. So this ought to be fun. What could go wrong? Welcome, everybody, to the Beards and Bible Podcast. This is a very unique episode of the Beards and Bible Podcast, but it is one nonetheless. I am joined by the original OG co-host. He's back. Gabe, how you doing, man?
Doing great. It is good to be back.
Yeah, man.
Sorry I skipped an episode there on you.
What are you like... Is it legal for you to talk about everything that caused you to skip the episode?
Yeah, it's legal. I mean, basically, it's legal. It's kosher. Yeah, we had insane record amount of rainfall here in southern Alabama a few weeks back, and it caused the building in which we rent and meet as a congregation to flood, and water came in and it kind of, you know, crept up the drywall and at least the front portion, like the foyer of our building. And yeah, we walked into like a board meeting, like a leadership meeting. And as soon as I stepped foot in the building, it was just like I stepped into a puddle. And I was like, oh, wow, this is not a good sign.
Oh, gosh.
So yeah, that was like a day or two before we were supposed to record the episode on tithing, I think it was. And yes. I was like, Josh, I'm gonna have to call in a favor. I cannot do this because we have some drywall to rip out. And yeah,
so you guys ended up having to rip out drywall, and did you have to replace subfloor or anything like that?
No, unfortunately, it's just really thin industrial grade carpet on top of the slab, so we just
we had it
cleaned and stuff. Yeah, but all the drywall and insulation we had to rip out. So this coming weekend we're gonna work on reinstalling all that. So, but yeah, it's my anniversary weekend. Stacy and I will be celebrating 18 years together on Sunday. So I'm gonna dip out on that and let the other guys do a much better job than what I would do working with drywall. So
that is a wise man. And how many years is this for you guys?
18.
No joke.
Mm-mm. It's 18.
Wait, 2020. So 2007, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2007.
Hang on, I'm doing my 2024.
It was a beautiful March day.
I think, look, buddy, it says 17 on my calculator.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, Stacy and I both are off a year, if that's the case. We've been saying 18 back and forth.
I was about to say, I was like, man, I remember that weekend, but I just looked it up. I think it said 17.
Let's do this. Hang on.
Yeah. So you're counting it
up. Hey, Siri, how many years ago was 2007?
It was 16 years ago.
What? 16 years ago.
Well,
okay. I guess it would be 17 once you hit that year. Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm going on my calculator. 2024 minus 2007 is 17.
Okay. All right.
If anybody's listening to this and you're like, what a bunch of idiots, how are they smart enough to have a podcast because you can't do basic math. I'm talking more about myself if I didn't get it right. But, man, that still feels like it shouldn't be that long. It doesn't feel like it was 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it flew by. 17 years.
That's insane. Wow.
Yeah. How was your day today?
Man, it was crazy. Cray-cray. Yeah. Ever had one of those days where it just feels like from the moment you wake up till, like, I literally logged onto this podcast, I had people needing me from like the first moment I got out of bed till I literally just sat down to get on this podcast. You ever had days like that?
Oh yeah. Where it's just like all day long, people are like needing your attention and
not like a bad way. Nobody's being rude or pushy. Mm-hmm. It has literally been like, one thing that bled into another thing that went to another thing. So mm-hmm. meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after phone call after email after coming home, being dad, putting kids to bed, all that stuff, which, you know, is a delight and a joy, but there is definitely a price to be paid for that because you are frantic and tired by the time you kiss your last kid goodnight and shut the door to their bedroom. You ever have that moment where you just like take a deep breath at the top of the stairs, like,
Yeah. And I think part of being a mature man, I think too, kind of comes along with it. It's like you give a lot, people expect a lot, and you do it and you don't expect a thank you. And that's just kind of part of being.
Oh, I expect a thank you. I better be getting thanks from my wife if she's listening to this podcast. She better be sending me a text right now. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I think sometimes we get into these little pity parties, and I'm totally guilty of this, getting these pity parties. I think, man, you know, I just want a day to myself, you know, or like whatever. But really, that doesn't exist. If you're married and have kids and you're a pastor, that's just no.
And here's the thing. It's like, even if I have had those days where I like go hunting or play golf or go fishing or whatever, the whole time, all I'm thinking about is my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's like people will tell me, you just need to go fishing. You just need to go take a day. And it's like, man, I just don't, I mean, yes, I'm all for Sabbath rest. Yes. And amen to that. But like, I just feel like I'm probably going to be in this mode until my kids are a little bit older or out of the house. Like it's just going to be this way. And on days like today, I was doing the dishes while my boys were upstairs taking a bath, and I could hear them screaming at each other. And I knew that the bathtub was going to be like water all over the floor. And, you know, my daughter had a bad day, so I had to talk to her about it. And, you know, my wife's going to a life group tonight at church, and I'm scrubbing pots. And there's a phrase that somebody told me once that says fruitfulness in your 50s and 60s is a result of faithfulness in your 30s and 40s. And on days like today, I just have to keep saying that back to myself, that faithfulness in this season of life will lead to fruitfulness in later seasons of life. And me being engaged as a dad is like a huge investment that may not seem like it's paying off immediately, but it will pay off eventually.
Yeah. At least that's what we tell ourselves, right?
Well, I mean, your kid Noah's what, 15, 16?
Yeah, he's about to be 16. It's crazy.
Yeah, but dude, like you guys, I remember when he was born, you guys have done such a good job. He is a fantastic young man.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, he's over at the fire department right now. He's doing like this Explorer program with the fire department.
Oh, nice.
Where they go and do like I don't know, mentorship, apprenticeship stuff with firefighters and stuff. So
that's awesome, man.
Tonight's his first night there. And of course, Stacey's super emo about it because she's like, my little guy is all grown up. My baby's all grown up.
And you're
they
like,
texted us pictures of him wearing. Yeah. He was, they texted us pictures of him wearing like the firefighter uniform, and the whole thing. I don't really call it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, yeah, she's like, oh, he's all growing up. So but we got another one on the way. So I'm like, get over it.
Yeah,
the one in the shoot.
So 15-year difference between your oldest and your youngest, right?
That's crazy. Yeah, that is crazy.
Well, tonight's episode is a little bit different in that we have questions we're going to ask each other that are completely unknown to the other guy. And so, therefore, our responses to said questions are going to be completely unscripted. And so we're going to go off the cuff and see what happens. And yeah, this should be fun. So
I've been low key nervous about this all day. I'm just going to be honest. Not because I'm answering questions. Obviously I don't care about you asking questions, but it's just like, I'm a relatively private person. So like, I'm nervous about what questions you're going to ask me. For real, I've been like fretting it all day. So but anyways,
I'll be good. I won't ask you anything too personal. Yeah. Okay. So I would say paper, rock, scissors for who goes first, but,
okay. Oh, we're not doing that.
Well, you want to, but you're going to have to tell me cause your camera's off what you got.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay. How do we do this?
1, 2, 3, shoot. Well, then we got... And then the honor system, because I can't see you.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's the honor system. Okay, ready? Okay. One, two, three.
Shoot. Okay.
Okay. I'm holding up scissors.
I'm holding up paper.
Ooh. So I get to go first.
Yeah, I guess. That's if you want. You can ask me a question first, or I can ask you a question first. You can get it over with, or you can draw first blood. So your choice.
I'll draw first blood here. Here's the first question I thought of to ask you.
Okay.
Now that you're rounding the bend, you're in your 30s, quickly approaching your 40s. I want to ask you, you're near the midway point of your life. Looking back, what would you say was the biggest regret in your life so far?
The biggest regret in my life so far, man, straight for the jugular.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. To be gut level honest with you, I think the biggest regret in my life up to this point was not getting serious about my faith sooner. In that when you and I were playing music together in college and right after college, I mean, you were around for all these years, but I would have called myself a Christian, but I was like not living it out at all. I was drinking far more than I needed to and partying and not really being the kind of man that is a Christian man, and almost giving myself an excuse for it because I was young. And I think I just wasted a lot of years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And I think, obviously like that's a huge regret of mine. Like I wish I would have been more serious about getting discipled and growing in my faith and being obedient to the Lord's call on my life. But also in the midst of that, I had some really unhealthy dating relationships that I wish I would have not stayed in those relationships as long as I did. I wish I would have done that in a more God-honoring way. And I wish I would have in some ways stood up for myself in some pretty toxic relationships and said, no, you're not going to treat me this way, and ended them before they ended. But I didn't, and it ended up causing me a lot of heartache and pain in the long run. And so, man, you went straight for it.
Well, I mean, am I on the right track though? Like you said, just pick four questions that could be random topics. Dude. You know? Yeah. Okay.
Did you know how to answer that question? If somebody asked you that question, would you know how to answer that question?
I wouldn't. I'd have to think about it much longer than you did.
Yeah.
But no, I think your answer was probably really encouraging and probably edifying to someone out there listening that maybe is walking in your shoes to a certain extent. So,
if you're under the age of 30 and you're like just kind of playing around in your faith and you're not serious about it, but you know you're surely born again and you know you could be doing more for the Lord and you should be doing more for the Lord and God's put something on your heart to do, but you're just kicking the can down the road, I promise you, you're going to regret lukewarm Christian living. I promise you. So you're not getting away with anything. I thought I was getting away with something, that I could have my cake and eat it too, but I look back now and I'm just like, man, those are the biggest regrets that I have. So if you're under age of 30 and you're listening, please just don't do what I did. Hey, so speaking of being a parent, my 8-year-old son is down here about to tattle on his 3-year-old. So Aiden, what is it that you need to tell me? Your mom is it? Come here. There he is right there.
Please tell the audience.
There he is. He says Judah won't go to sleep. Okay.
He turned on the lights.
Can you speak into the microphone? Tell everybody.
Judah won't go to sleep.
Okay. Well, I'm busy doing this, so I want you to go tell him that you talked to Dad, and Dad said that he had to go to sleep, okay?
He never listens when you say that, unless you say he's going to get a spanking.
Son, okay, well then say that he's going to be disciplined, okay?
Okay.
All right, I love you. Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Judah, Judah, Judah.
He pretended like he didn't like being on camera, but he loves it, so.
That's why.
All right. Time for your first question. Are you ready?
Yeah, and if you have to throw it out there and I answer it while you go get discipline. Judah squared away, that's totally cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we'll be okay. So, which, okay. By the way, if you're listening to this, right. I don't make a habit of regularly beating my kids, so please don't misunderstand what my eight-year-old will say. So.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Gabe.
Yes.
Has there ever been a time when you were tempted to walk away from your faith? And if so, can you talk about that and talk about what it is that kept you going?
Yeah, definitely. So talk about that and what it is that kept me going. You said I went for the jugular. Wow. This was a deep question. Is there ever a time when I wanted to walk away from my faith? Yeah. I would say there's more than one occasion. I think there was a time, like you said, probably 18, 19, 20, 21, somewhere in that range where I subconsciously was walking away from my faith. And it wasn't a conscious choice, but it was something where I desired what the world had to offer more than what my faith had to offer. So yeah, subconsciously I wanted to walk away from my faith just through my desires and actions and everything else. But also I'd say later in life, much, much later in life, I would say as a result of some deep, hurt, you know, we did an episode on like church hurt several months back, or maybe a couple of years back. I don't remember. And I think that's some of, we mentioned in that episode, that's some of the worst pain that a person of faith can have to endure is from people of like faith. When you feel betrayal from people of like faith, that is a deep pain. And that is a pain that that is hard to climb up out of, for sure. And when I say I wanted to walk away from my faith at that point, it wasn't like I wanted to do a full 180, and I wasn't going to become like a, you know, anti-Christian apologist, or I wasn't going to become an atheist or an agnostic even. It's just I wanted to just spend my entire weekend just on a boat fishing or kayaking or camp. I wanted to spend it away from people of faith. I at one point wanted nothing to do with people who claim to be followers of Christ. And I think, you know, you asked what brought me back or what kept me going through that. I think just a lot of openness and sharing my deep discouragement with people that I know and trust and love. With Stacy probably being the most prominent, but then other people around me who I was able to trust and open up with about my discouragement. I was willing to walk away. I wanted to walk away from my faith, but not turn my back on God, I guess you could say. Does that make sense?
It was almost like you didn't want the responsibility of living the Christian life, especially as a Christian leader, but you still believed in God, but you just said, I don't really want to perhaps do what God's calling me to do.
Like we had this neighbor one time, his name was Greg, and he's an awesome guy, great guy. He would just see you struggling with something. He'd run across the street and help you with it. Just an awesome person. But as far as I know, lived a godless life. I mean, he was probably agnostic. I don't know. But there were people in church growing up, people in my life that were like vipers, just nasty, poisonous, toxic human beings who claim to have a close relationship with the Lord. And I put them up against someone like Greg, who is a godless, but extremely moral, righteous, just human being, and thought, man, maybe I could just be like Greg. Maybe I'd just be like him and just, I'll be okay. And I won't have anything to do with these people who claim to be really religious people, and I'll be all right, you know? So it was more of just a kind of just stepping away from that, the systematized faith, and you know, if my Stacy and my kids wanted to go, that's fine, to church or whatever, that's totally fine. But I really wanted nothing to do with it, but
yeah.
Yeah. Having that openness with people and allowing them to pray for me and counsel me through that, I think is what really kind of steadied me in that storm.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, thank you for sharing that. Well, how long would you say you were in that season?
Oh, man, better part of a year.
Wow.
Yeah, better part of a year.
Man. Well, that's awesome that you were able to come out of it, and it's awesome that God brought people in your life to speak truth to you and get you back to the place where you were. Thank God for that. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I think my faith is stronger for it, you know.
Sure.
And that's one of the, I think if Satan can't bring you down as a man of God with, my dad used to say the three G's, girls, gold, or glory, I think he'll use discouragement.
Absolutely, man.
Like a war of attrition, just wear you down with discouragement.
Death by a thousand paper cuts.
Yeah. But good question, though.
Thanks, man. That wasn't too terrible, was it?
No. Okay. On a little bit lighter note, I want you to give me, you got 30 seconds.
Okay.
Give me your top three bands, top three favorite bands of your life, like any era of your life. Ready to go.
Oh my gosh. 30 seconds. Holy cow. Okay. So I would say Beatles have to be up there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't not have the Beatles when you're talking about favorite bands. I would also say the band. Oh, this is so hard. Can I do singer songwriters?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Ryan Adams.
Hmm.
So Ryan Adams, big fan of Ryan Adams and his early stuff, Heartbreaker and Gold, two of my favorite albums of all times. And then if I was just talking a band that is like so much fun to see live and so much fun to hear them jam out, the band Wilco.
Mm-hmm.
I saw them in Coney Island in Brooklyn in 2009. Tony Page and I saw a live show. They jammed for about 2.5 hours and it was phenomenal.
Wow.
So yes. Wow. There you go. Beatles, Ryan Adams, Wilco. I could probably list like 30 more if you had more time. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Gosh, that's hard though.
That is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who would you say is your top three?
Oh, I was ready to ask that.
You don't have to give me top three. Like, what would you say a band that you're just like, I love their stuff, I love their catalog?
Right now I'm listening to a lot of Need to Breathe.
Okay.
Yep. They just put out I guess it's CMT, what do they call it? Fireside album, where they're just playing completely acoustic and it's amazing. Oddly enough, I listen to a lot of Shane and Shane. I think they're really, really talented, songwriters and musicians and I just love putting earbuds in and listening to all the different instruments.
They have such good voices too.
Yeah, they're awesome. Man, my third one. Whew. That is really tough. It might have to be an old-time favorite of mine. It's been spanned a couple decades probably at this point. Was not Nickelback, but Nickel Creek.
I was about to say,
Nickel.
You can be careful.
Yeah, Nickel Creek. the bluegrass, neo bluegrass.
That's the kind of music that we played.
Yeah, I really like Nickel Creek.
So in 2005, 2006, when we were in college, Gabe and I were talking about. I was already playing with a band. We were playing kind of more hard rock, and I was playing keys and singing. And Gabe and I started talking about just how much we really love Nickel Creek and Ryan Adams, Whiskey Town, some of the stuff Bright Eyes was doing. And we said, hey, why don't we start a band called the Callahans? Mm-hmm. And so we did. And it was kind of like Nickel Creek, Whiskey Town-esque. And we had a blast doing it. It was a lot of fun.
We should do the outro. Do one of the songs as the outro.
You remember this song? Let's see if you can remember it. That's you playing drums. Do you remember this one?
Oh, yeah.
This was Gabe and my band back in 2006?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When's the last time you heard this track?
It's been a few years, probably.
Gabe's playing drums, I'm playing guitar. Our buddy George is playing the harmonica and the bass. Yes. There you go.
Yeah, that's good times.
Good times. Walk down memory lane. Man, that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. I was thinking you're going to say the Callahans as one of your tops, but you mm-hmm. didn't.
Didn't even cross my mind.
You said Nickel Creek. So, you know, Nickel Creek is basically who we were trying to be. You know, they say that imitation is the greatest form of flattery. So, anyway. All right. Next question. All right. What is the hardest part of your ministry and why?
So I'm in it's called a denomination. I'm in a denomination that tends to attract every so often attracts very self-righteous, arrogant, prideful human beings who claim to have a knowledge of truth, but yet lack a personal relationship with their Savior. That is a problem that plagues Messianic Judaism, Messianic faith. And I think that's something that even within myself, I'm always looking at and combating. But it's something that we are prone to as humans, because Messianic people are very knowledgeable of Scripture, and probably, you know, I would say more so if you put them up against your average Southern Baptist, have a higher degree of biblical learning and literacy. A lot of them even will be able to read biblical languages. And it's just like Paul says, knowledge puffs up. And I always tell people and try to remind people constantly that with every bit of information you learn, you have to counter it with a greater degree of humility. But yeah, that's probably the hardest thing, is working, trying to serve people who are still yet to be fully born again, yet have a sense of false security in their own religious piety and self-righteousness. Does that make sense?
Oh, wow. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Golly bum.
That's a lot. I know that's a lot. I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, because I'm totally guilty of that. But
no, I think that you having that insight of your own tribe is, first of all, like tremendously humble for you to be able to say, hey, here's a shortcoming that we have within our tribe. And takes a tremendous amount of, like, you know, self-awareness of, hey, this is a tendency we have, you know. But I'm sure there's probably people listening to this from other tribes that would probably nod along to everything you just said and say, hey, us too, right? Because I don't think that self-righteousness and theological legalism, I guess, is a good way to say it. I don't think that's exclusive to just one group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because knowledge puffs up, and as human beings, we're all broken sinners who are trying to prove our value and worth on our own. I think we sometimes grab onto, you know, hey, look how much Torah I know, or look at the doctrines of grace that I have. I've read Calvin's Institutes, or whatever the case may be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And really, it's just, you know, I'm teaching through the book of Galatians right now, and really it's just, it's basically a works of the law that we're trying to use to establish our worth in the eyes of God. That's, you know, apart from who we really are in Christ, and It's unfortunate that we do it, but I mean, I don't think it's exclusive to just your tribe.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Because I mean, like in some Calvinist traditions, in Reform faiths, there's going to be a higher level of biblical literacy and scholasticism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, with that comes with, you know, pride and kind of looking down at your nose at other people who don't believe like you do. I mean, I've been in that environment, so I can speak to that as well. But then you go to some of the most like podunk backwoods country churches where, you know, biblical literacy is super low. Sometimes you have some of the most salt of the earth people, but they know the heart and the will of God, and they have a personal relationship with their Savior that is very intimate, very, very close.
Absolutely, man.
And I think there's a balance that one needs to strike there, but yeah, it's a good question.
Well, and to love the Lord with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength is sometimes a tremendous challenge to be, you know, symmetrical in your faith, I guess. Like, I think sometimes we have a tendency to want to grab onto one of those. Like, I'm going to love the Lord with all of my mind, and I'm going to be the most intellectual Christian you've ever met. Or I'm going to love the Lord with all my heart. So I'm going to be very emotional, but not so much on my mind, because I don't like reading the scripture and, you know, old dead guys that wrote books of theology. I don't want anything to do with that. And so I think being a well-formed, mature believer means that you have to have some symmetry in all those areas, you know?
Yeah. That'll preach.
That'll preach. So that's a good answer, man. Thanks for that answer.
Yeah. So is it my turn to ask you a question? I lost track.
I think so. I think you're on number three, right?
Yeah. Okay. If you could meet any historical figure other than Jesus, they could be from the Bible, they could be from history, who would it be and why?
That is a very, 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 very difficult one for me. Wow. Well, I can think of two off the top of my head that I would love to meet. And I'll give you the first. And the second one you're going to be really surprised by, because you're going to be like, that doesn't sound like a historical figure, but this is my answer, not yours, so you can't judge me. All right. Okay, so here's the first. I would meet and sit down with and talk with Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good one.
Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, or Joshua Chamberlain, however you want to say it, he was an American college professor from Maine who volunteered during the Civil War to join the Union Army. He was actually, he taught English, and he was actually he had studied at Bangor Theological Seminary. So he was a seminarian, and then he was an English teacher. So he was like a very accomplished, in the world of academia. And then during the American Civil War, he just felt led, because I mean, he was a great man of faith, to volunteer to be a officer in the Union Army. And he led a unit in the Battle of Gettysburg that during a part of that battle called Little Round Top, he performed perhaps the most critical military maneuver in the entire Battle of Gettysburg, for which he was awarded the Medal of Honor. And I actually have a painting in my office at the church of that maneuver. It's called Chamberlain's Charge. And basically, he was at the top of this hill called Little Round Top, and for like the entire day, about five or six direct onslaughts from the Confederates charging up the hill, he and his forces had fought off. And he knew they were coming again, but all of his men, they were out of ammunition. And he knew he couldn't give up that high ground, because if he did, then the Union line would fall into itself, and like they could potentially lose the high ground and lose the Battle of Gettysburg. And so he ordered his men to fix bayonets, and without really having adequate ammo, they charged down the hill of Little Round Top and ended up breaking the assault of the Confederates and pushing them back. And some people say perhaps that military decision in that moment was the thing that won the Battle of Gettysburg, which most historians consider the Battle of Gettysburg the turning point of the Civil War. So, So yeah, that would be the first guy. I would sit down with him and just talk with him about, man, what was it like? You had a comfortable life. You had young kids. You were a professor at an academic institution. You've left to go to war. Like, why? Like, let's talk about that. What was that like? You know? So
it's I wrote a paper on that battle in college. I had to take a Civil War history class. Yeah. Yeah. It's really fascinating. We had to talk about, write a paper on what battle in the Civil War would have, had repercussions for modern times today or something like that. It was really neat researching it. I went to Gettysburg and I went to Little Round Top.
Always
and Devil's Den and all that. Yeah, Devil's Den. And just, you know, thinking that just being there where I think, man, how many people died in the Battle of Gettysburg? I want to say it's like...
It was a ton. It was the largest military... Let me hop on Wikipedia. It was the largest military engagement of the Civil War. 50,000 combined casualties over 3 days. Yeah.
Sheesh. Yeah, I was going to say 50,000. That's insane. And still to this day, I mean, think if you take all wars, all casualties of the United States and all the wars we've been in the history of our country, it still does not equal the amount of casualties in just the Civil War.
Yeah.
If you add them all together, it's crazy. Like just the amount of bloodshed during the Civil War. But another thing that blows my mind is the fact that Robert E. Lee took his army as far north as Pennsylvania. Isn't that crazy to think about?
Yeah, that is, man. That really is. And it was all, it was like up until the Battle of Gettysburg, really the Confederacy had been winning on the battlefield. And so, you know, there were so many blunders, just tactically speaking, that the Confederate Army took in the Battle of Gettysburg, one of which it was the Pickett's Charge, which is basically a full frontal assault into artillery. Which is never a good idea, but yeah, I don't know, man. Like the Battle of Little Round Top was always fascinating to me because it was so counterintuitive for them to fix bayonets and charge down the hill.
Yeah,
after you know, after having survived six assaults, and you know, so anyway, that won him the Medal of Honor, and then he went on to be the governor of Maine. So I think I'd just pick his brains on leadership and pick his brains on his faith and you know what motivated him to do what he did. And, so that'd be my first guy. Second guy would just be Rich Mullins.
Nice, yeah. Ragamuffin.
The Ragamuffin, yeah, man. He just seems like a cool guy to hang out with. So I'd love to sit down and play music with him and ask him to play the hammer dulcimer. And yeah, I love Rich Mullins. So there you
That's go. That's funny.
Yeah, man. All right, you ready for the next one?
Well, going back to Gettysburg, if you haven't watched it, the 1993 film Gettysburg, it's centered around that battle, Little Round Top, and features, you know, Joshua Chamberlain and his I think his younger brother was there with him as well.
Yep. And that was actually true. He did serve alongside his brother. So pretty cool. Okay. Here's your question. Question three for you. If you could change one thing about the season of life that you're in right now, what would it be?
Having more time for my family. I feel like I'm always busy all the time. And I feel like I oftentimes do my family an injustice by not having enough time in my day to, I don't know. And it's a kind of a internal dialogue that I have kind of for a better part of the day, not a better part, maybe just a total, maybe an hour throughout the day that, man, I hope I'm doing a good job being a father, being a husband. I feel like I'm too busy. Just that kind of like, am I too busy? Am I making enough time for them? That's probably the one thing I would change in my season of life. Other than that, I love the season of life I'm in. I feel like I've always felt like a 39, 40 year old, even when I was much, much younger. So I feel like I'm finally in the age mentally I've always been.
Your biological age just caught up with where you were for a long time. Yeah.
But no, I think just having more time, having more time to devote to my family and doing things with them, you know, driving up to, Northwest Georgia and spending time in the mountains and just doing stuff like that. I wish I could do that more often.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I resonate with that deeply. I think that would be the exact thing that I would say. I wish I had more time. I wish there was two of me sometimes. Yeah. Or I wish I could have like a magic stopwatch that just stopped time. Mm-hmm. So then I could like walk in the door of my house, hit that stopwatch, clean the whole house, you know, get the whole house clean, do all the dishes and stuff, and then just like sit and eat and enjoy time with the kids without having to do like normal housekeeping chore stuff. Cause sometimes I just feel like it's Groundhog Day. Like I just do the same stinking chores over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. So
that, I think, and the worst feeling is like, you go to work all day and, you know, you give a lot to a lot of people. And then, by the time you get home, you know, your kids just like Micah, my youngest, all he wants to do is wrestle. And it's like, all I want to do is just post up and watch TV or something, which I don't do typically, but you know, mentally and physically, emotionally, I'm just kind of like, blah, you know?
Yeah, man.
And, it's hard to snap out of that and remember, wait, this is the first time my kids are seeing me today. Cause I left the house when they're still asleep and I can't always be that tired dad, you know?
Yep. Which if we had a magic stopwatch, you know, we could hit the pause button, go take a 3-hour nap and then get up and then be like fresh and engaged for the kids. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Telling you, we got to invest in magic stopwatches. So fresh out of those though, unfortunately.
Either that or cocaine. I don't know. No, don't do that. I just said that out loud.
You just said that. Yeah. Don't, if you're listening to this, do you that. A history of addiction. Please forgive Gabe. So,
yeah, please forgive me. Don't do that.
Don't do that. Cocaine.
It's my turn now. This is my final question for you.
Okay.
Sorry, my questions haven't been very spiritual or biblical. Sorry.
No, yours have been fun. I just know you're
kind of answered a lot of those throughout the years of doing these. Yeah. This is kind of more of a personal question, but a good one. What is one part of your everyday routine that you'd be better off without?
One part of my everyday routine that I would be better off without. Like a part of it that I hate or a part of it that's unnecessary?
Something that you, maybe part of your daily routine that that you wish you could change or you wish you could remove from your daily routine. It could be maybe like a habit or it could be something that's like a means to an end, but you have to do it. Like what's something you'd be better off without?
I see. I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So... if you work with me, you know this about me. I am an efficiency junkie. And so I do time blocking for all of my work days from Saturday to Wednesday. That's my work week. And so from the moment that I get up in the morning until I lay down, I have every hour of my day blocked off. And so I plan out my day that way from, you know, waking up early in the morning, exercising, being in the scriptures, spending time in prayer, making breakfast for the kids, getting out the door. And then once I get in the office, like all the things I need to do, which includes meeting with staff, writing sermons, researching all that stuff. So I tend to not have a lot of just fluff time in my day. I just kind of wired to not do that. I don't like that. Hmm. But I tell you just a habit that I sometimes have in between like huge blocks of really, really heavy focused work is sometimes I'll do like, you know, 2 or 3 hours of just like sermon writing or sermon prep. And then I don't know if I do it to like reward myself or I don't know. I'll just hop on like Facebook for like 2 minutes and just scroll. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really dumb because I don't really care that much. You know what I mean? Like I hop on and I scroll or like, if I do have time where I'm like standing in line at the grocery store, I pull out my phone, I pull out Instagram and I scroll. And so it's a really bad habit that I feel like that's the part of my life that I don't feel like is very disciplined, is in those down times, I don't know how to just sit and just let my mind be still. Because I'm so focused on getting every hour, you know, something out of every minute of every hour. So then when I do have downtime, instead of just sitting and letting my mind wander and let it be still and pray, I think I'm sometimes so addicted to the go, 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 go. I pull out a phone and man, that's shameful to it, man. I can't believe I just admitted that to all of these people listening, but yeah.
No. I'm right there with you. I mean, do you ever like walk into a doctor's office waiting room, or you're like, you know, I don't know, where's another big one where we all, you know, the Walmart pickup section, and you drive up and find a parking spot and you look across and everyone is on their phones.
Yes.
And you know, you're sitting in that waiting room and like literally everyone is on their phone. And sometimes I just like, I refuse to take my phone out of my pocket because I don't want to be just another person on their phone. Like, I'm just going to pick up a magazine and look at a magazine, or just stare around the room and think about what I'm doing that day or something.
Well, and here's the here's the crazy part about it. You feel like an absolute psycho when you do that sometimes. Like, like yesterday I was in Franklin and I was meeting with somebody, and I got there a little bit early and I had about, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes to kill. And so, I went to the Starbucks, got a cup of coffee, and there was a park bench outside. It was a really nice day. And then I just sat on the park bench with my cup of coffee and just sat and drank my coffee, just enjoying the day, like it's sunshine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there were some people that were getting out of their car and like walking through this office complex and like saw me. And like, I think they thought I was like a serial killer or something, because like, I don't have a laptop. I'm not looking at a phone. Yeah. I'm just sitting there enjoying the day. And then I thought, man, that's kind of sad that that's so unusual in our culture. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was really hard. It was hard to just sit there for 15 minutes without a phone. It was hard to just sit there and enjoy the morning and pray and let my mind wander. Like, that was really hard for me. And this is just me confessing, just trying to be vulnerable. But like, yeah, man, that's a bad habit. That's something in my routine I really wish I could change, because I feel like if I mastered that, I would be so much more efficient. So
cool.
Yeah. Wow. That was an embarrassing one. Yeah. So you got one more?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So this one's pretty personal. This would be kind of a personal one we can end on for you.
Oh, great.
And you don't have to share names if you're not comfortable sharing names. But has there ever been someone you loved that you thought was a Christian, you walked with in Christ, and then they walked away from the faith? What was that like?
Yeah.
Why did you think that happened? And like, what's your relationship with that person look like now?
Okay. Repeat the first part of the question.
So has there ever been somebody that you really, really loved and you were close with and you walked with, and then you thought they were Christian and you had like real Christian fellowship and brotherhood with them or sisterhood with them, and then they just totally walked away from the faith?
Yeah, that's happened to me a couple times, and that kind of ties in with the question you asked me about walking away from my faith. I actually watched a couple, like a married couple, walk away from their faith and make a conscious decision to abandon their faith. In a very, very like sudden, public way. And that had repercussions in my own life and faith in ways that were different. Like, it didn't make me want to turn my back on God. It made me want to turn my back, like I said, on more organized religion, I guess you could say. But that was kind of connected to that, that era of my life. I loved them. I cared for them. I was very close with them and felt kind of blindsided by it. Oddly enough, 2 weeks ago, someone came up to me and said that they were in contact. They made contact with the husband and that they have since returned to the faith and are doing much better.
Oh, praise God. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we didn't end on a great note. It was a very, like I said, a very hard, quick turn and setting fire to some bridges there. So, yeah. So I think there's the very beginnings of some restoration that's happening there. And, but no, that's happened, I would say a few times. And it hurts, just the same every time. You don't get used to that.
Yeah.
I think no one under my spiritual leadership has done that. And I dread the day that might happen, just because I tend to blame myself for other people's decisions, even if they're not good ones. And I feel if that were to happen, you know, when you marry someone, for instance, you officiate a wedding, mm-hmm. and then they hit hard times as a couple, and then they seek you out for counsel.
Sure.
And maybe you feel this way as well, but it's like you almost put that weight on your shoulders saying, you know what, I brought these two together. I officiated their wedding. I need to make sure this works.
Yeah.
And that's not a healthy way of looking at that. Just, you know, I'm admitting that, but that's sometimes what I do. But I think the same thing with someone under my spiritual leadership and pastoral care, if they were to turn their back on Christ, I would have a tendency to blame myself. Maybe I didn't do a good enough job. Maybe I didn't prepare them enough or something. Maybe I didn't teach well enough or give them enough time. And I need to always kind of mentally prepare myself for that and just pray that never happens. But yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah, thank you for answering that. That can be unbelievably painful to watch, especially somebody mm-hmm. that you know, spent a lot of time maybe serving in ministry together or talking about the Lord together, or, you know, you really thought, hey, this person's a believer, and then they walk away from it. That's hard, man. Mm-hmm. That's super hard.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Well, here's the million dollar question. Do you feel like if somebody does that, did they have it and they lost it, or did they never have it to begin with?
Didn't we do that? We did an episode on that.
No, we did. Yeah. I'm just trying to poke.
Once saved, always saved. Or...
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to answer that. That's okay. That's all right.
Oh, you're really asking me. I was really.
I'm trying to remember what you said. I mean, cause I think personally, yeah. like somebody's life, it's how somebody, I mean, cause we don't know, like when God looks at somebody, he sees them as his or they're not his, mm. right? He doesn't view it linearly. He doesn't say, okay, they were saved in this moment, then they're not saved over here. They were saved in this moment, they were not saved over here. And so I tend to see it as if somebody walks away from the faith, like, man, there's always a chance that they could come back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if they walk away and then that's it, right? They stay an unbeliever throughout the duration of their life until they pass. Then I would say, and I don't really know if that was ever really real with them to begin with. But I mean, obviously some people would disagree with me, but yeah, that's kind of how I view it. But
First John, this is just something interesting to ponder. First John chapter 2, verse 19 says, they went out from us, but they did not really belong to us. For if they had mm-hmm. belonged to us, they would have remained with us.
Yep.
But their going out showed that none of them belonged to us.
Yep.
But you have an anointing from the Holy One, and all of you know the truth.
Yep.
I do not write to you because you do not know the truth, but because you do know it, and because no lie comes from the truth. Who is a liar? It is whoever denies that Jesus is the Messiah. Such a person is the Antichrist, denying the Father and the Son. No one who denies the Son has the Father. Whoever acknowledges the Son has the Father also. So that's pretty intense. I mean,
yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I go to the parable of the sower that Jesus, you know, said that the seed is thrown out and some of it falls on rocky soil. Some of it falls on soil where there's a bunch of weeds. Some of it falls on the road, you know? Mm-hmm. And
the seed that falls on the rocky soil, it, you know, springs up real quick and has the appearance that it's healthy, but it has no real root in it and it withers up and dies. And so I think that early on in life, especially to like youth group culture and Christian college, you're probably around a lot of people that are in the faith simply because their parents make them go to youth group, or the only friends they had were youth group kids. You know what I mean? So maybe those roots aren't really that deep. Maybe the soil of their heart is actually quite rocky. I mean, there's nothing, you know, all it takes is them being in a different friend group, and all of a sudden they go, I don't know if I believe this anymore.
Right.
And so in the parable of the sower, Jesus says it's only the seed that falls on the good soil and that bears fruit. You know, that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of soil, that's the kind of receptiveness to the gospel that we all need if we're to receive it. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a mystery this side of eternity, and I don't think that we're the ones ultimately that get to make that call. That's the Lord's, but it can be hard. Yeah, I think sometimes to try to figure that out when you're you know, pretty sure, man, this person really knew Jesus. And then you're like, and they're denying Jesus now. That's crazy. How does that work? You know? So, yeah. So did we get through all the questions?
Yeah, that's all mine.
Okay. That wasn't too bad.
Mm-mm. No, that was fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. You didn't.
That's fun in a nerdy podcasting way.
Yeah, that was. Who is your, so who would be your historical figure that you would hang out with besides Jesus?
Wow. Wow. And I don't know.
So you asked me that, but you don't know how to answer that?
Man. Gosh. I honestly, maybe. Yeah. Wow.
See how hard that is to answer?
That's extremely hard.
Yeah.
There's so many fascinating people in history. I mean,
yes, there is.
Nikolai Tesla would be cool to talk to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, did you ever see the movie The Prestige?
No, I didn't.
Nikolai Tesla was played by none other than David Bowie. David Bowie is Nikolai Tesla.
Hmm.
This is ground control to Major Dome.
Louis Zamperini from the book Unbroken.
Oh yeah,
he'd be cool to hang out with.
At first, I thought you were going to say Louis Armstrong.
No.
Yeah, the guy from the book Unbroken. That would be yeah.
Yeah.
Golly, I bet he would have so many cool stories.
Yeah.
I would say anybody from the Band of Brothers series. Or the Pacific series, if you are a history nerd and you like those. Which, by the way, there is a new series on Apple TV called Masters of the Air. And it's the same people who made Band of Brothers and The Pacific. And I just started watching it last night. Fantastic. So good.
Mm.
So good.
A couple more. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Corrie Ten Boom. Those would be really cool people to hang out with.
Yes, they would.
Very intimidating. Very intimidating to hang out with, I'm sure.
But you know what's funny?
Very godly people.
There's so many people that were like, oh, I'd love to hang out with, like, you know, the Apostle Paul or Socrates or Galileo. But you go hang out with them, and guess what? They don't speak English. So that'd be a waste, wouldn't it? You get in there with the Apostle Paul, and you're like, hey, the Apostle Paul. And he's like, I can't speak ancient Greek off the top of my head. Mm. But he would know what you were saying. And that'd be a wasted wish, you know? So.
Good times.
Well, it has been a pleasure. if you have any questions for Gabe or I, send us an email, beardsandbiblepodcast@gmail.com. And little birdie tells me that our next episode might be a collaboration with some folks. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be fun. So, yeah. We will see you guys next time.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. That's our show. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe, share, And as always, send us a question if you've got one to the email beardsandbiblepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.